Blog Talk Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Stan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
No hell below us, above us only sky, says John Lennon. I'm Dan Barker, and this is the final Free Thought Radio of the year. Annie Laurie's not with me today. She's been at home all week with a really bad cold. She can barely even talk today. We were worried, of course, that it might be the ominous Omicron variant of COVID, so she got tested and it came back negative, so this is just an old-fashioned illness. Not that that makes it any more enjoyable, of course. This is the December 30th, 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio. Grant Blaschka of Audio for the Art is our engineer again, producing the show in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall. Free Thought Hall is the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin. So, Grant, do you have any New Year's plans? You have a band called The Earthlings, right?
That is correct. Unfortunately, we were going to be playing a show on New Year's Eve, but that got canceled due to COVID, so my plans are wide open.
Well, I guess that's kind of a safe thing. So you'll be working with us again next year, I hope. What have you done, like maybe 40 shows for us already?
It's got to be something like that. I think I've been the regular recorder since May or so. So it's been a lot.
Wow. Well, you're doing a great job. A lot of fun. Well, I hope you have a fun time on New Year's, whatever happens. As Annie Laurie always says every week, Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. FFRF has two purposes: to keep state and church separate and to educate the public about the views of non-theists. That's atheists, agnostics, secular humanists, and other non-religious people, whatever we call ourselves or don't call ourselves, the nuns, N-O-N-E-S. We're a national membership organization, and as John Lennon sang, we hope today you will join us. You can become a member of FFRF to support our work for a secular world by visiting FFRF.org or by calling 1-800-335-4021. Today we're going to mark the end of the year by honoring the lives of a number of freethinkers we lost in 2021. And then we'll hear some free thought music that is sometimes irreverent, sometimes funny, sometimes cautionary, sometimes optimistic. New Year's Day, January 1st, is important for freethinkers and for state-church separation because it was on New Year's Day, January 1st, 1802, that the phrase wall of separation was coined by Thomas Jefferson. He was a president at the time, and he went to work on New Year's Day. And in a letter that he wrote to the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, he said, "I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibit the free exercise thereof, thus building a wall of separation between church and state." And it is that principle from the First Amendment that motivates our work here at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Besides Free Thought Radio, we also have a TV show. It's called Free Thought Matters, which is broadcast. This week, we get to watch Annie Laurie interview Gloria Steinem at our annual convention in Boston in November. Gloria Steinem, probably the world's most famous feminist. If you were there, you know how special that interview was. Gloria had fallen the day before, and she'd hurt her rib, so she was not able to travel. but our tech team managed to connect her remotely so that everybody could see her on a large screen up in the front of the ballroom. Let's listen to a little bit of that interview.
Since we are here before 540 irreverent people, I want to talk a little bit about religion. And back in 1980 when I interviewed you, I did ask you about religion, and you made a very brilliant comment that I've never forgotten that also appears in The Truth Will Set You Free, but first it will piss you off. I don't know if I should read it or if you might remember. It's about the promise of an everlife being an incredible con job.
Yes, an afterlife, right, yeah.
So, go ahead.
In order to make you behave in a certain way now for a reward after death. I think that was the con job,
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, and then you said, it's an incredible con job when you think of it to believe something now in exchange for life after death. Even corporations with all their reward systems don't try to make it posthumous. That just came out of you. It was so amazing when I was interviewing you.
Living in the present is so much the answer to many questions. And being told to live in the future and to sacrifice in the present is, generally speaking, a sign of problems to come.
You also have written that when someone asked if you believe in God, you said, no, I believe in people.
Well, I suppose that I could have added that there is a godliness in each person, because there is such a miracle of possibilities and mysteries and uniqueness inside each person that I can't imagine that we would want anything further than that. And I do believe that much of the function of organized religion is to make us behave in a way that is against our self-interest now, with the notion that we will get a reward for this after we die.
Do you remember, there's an anecdote about how you went to Texas once to speak, and you saw a whole bunch of people holding a sign saying, Gloria Steinem is a humanist, and you thought they were there to greet you and thank you.
Yes, it's true. It's absolutely true. You know, I saw these signs outside the building in which we were to have our meeting, and I saw them from a distance. I thought, oh, you know, isn't that great? And then, of course, I came to realize that they were picketers who were objecting to my presence.
So you are definitely a humanist.
I think that was my first realization, that being a humanist was viewed as a negative, that it was anti-God in some way, which I should have known historically, but I did not.
And that was Gloria Steinem at our convention last November in Boston. And you can see that entire Free Thought Matters interview with Annie Laurie Gaylor and Gloria Steinem this Sunday on broadcast TV in many cities around the country. For stations and times, check our website, ffrf.org. You can also watch that show right now on FFRF's YouTube channel. Just look for the Free Thought Matters playlist on that channel. At the start of the show, I mentioned the ominous Omicron variant, but did I say it right? Is it Omicron or is it Omicron? I don't know how you would say it, Grant, but everybody's saying it different ways. Well, you know what? You can say it either way. When I was taking classes in New Testament Greek, preparing for the ministry, we pronounced it Omicron to distinguish it from the other Greek O letter, Omega, but I think that's just a scholarly convention. In English, we pronounce words of Greek origin like onomatopoeia with the short vowel, but in modern Greece, they call the Omicron Omikros. We do the same thing with words like ominous, which is from the Latin omen. So you can say it any way you like. Either way, it's a variant. So we know that much of the resistance to the vaccines is coming from religious people, especially evangelical Christians. It was white evangelical Christians who were behind Trump's packing of the Supreme Court with ultra-conservatives, and now we're dealing with the consequences. As ominous as the spreading Omicron or Omicron variant is, the upcoming showdown at the Supreme Court next week over the Biden administration's COVID-19 mandates is even worse. It's what the Washington Post called a highly unusual action. The justices scheduled oral arguments on Friday, January 7th, to consider both a vaccine mandate for healthcare workers and rules requiring companies with 100 or more staff to adopt a vaccine or testing requirement. This hearing was shoehorned in before the resumption of the regular oral arguments, and that is really alarming. We think that the very preamble of our Constitution notes that we the people have the right to provide for the general welfare, and it's vital that the Supreme Court does not overstep its authority and block federal government from protecting public health based on facts, reason, and science. So we're going to take a break, and after the break, we're going to honor some of the freethinkers who we lost in 2021, and then we're going to hear some irreverent, uplifting, maybe some funny, optimistic music to bring in the new year. I'm Dan Barker. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hello, this is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Dan Barker, and Annie Laurie is home, sick today with a common cold, but she'll be back again next week. Now, during this segment, I want to look back and honor some of the freethinkers who we lost in 2021. The famous actor Ed Asner, who was born in 1929, died this year. Ed Asner, as most of you know, played Lou Grant, and he played the Santa character on the movie Elf. He was the main character in the movie Up and many other movies and TV shows. In 2019, Ed Asner was here in this building, in our building here, Freethought Hall, and Annie Laurie and I got to interview him on Freethought Matters.
So you're portraying God. Do you mind if I ask whether you believe in God?
I don't know if I do or not. I don't think so.
You were raised Jewish, right?
Yeah.
So Orthodox Jewish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it didn't take?
Well, it did. I was drilled into me very intensively. My bar mitzvah was a gross failure. It was a terrible, terrible. I sang too high. I sang too fast. I think my dad probably cursed me on that day.
That was Ed Asner. Ed Asner became an honorary director of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and he was the recipient of FFRF's Clarence Darrow Award. You can watch that interview on FFRF's YouTube channel. Just go to the YouTube channel for FFRF and look for the Free Thought Matters playlist. Speaking of Clarence Darrow, an actor who played the Clarence Darrow part in Inherit the Wind on Broadway was Christopher Plummer. He was born in 1929. He was probably most known for his role of the father in The Sound of Music. Christopher Plummer said, "My sort of religion is one of romance. I think the arts are the best thing to hang on to, arts and science. I can't join the rest of the world in religions because they have become so bigoted and so dangerous. I just don't believe in them." That was Christopher Plummer. Another actor, Cloris Leachman, died this year. She was born in 1926. Cloris Leachman said, "I've been so relieved and so grateful not to have a God to believe in." The Broadway composer, of course, we know just recently died, Stephen Sondheim. He was born in 1930, and he died at the age of 91. Sondheim was thoroughly non-religious. He didn't call himself an atheist, but he lived his life completely free from religion. We're going to miss Stephen Sondheim. He had many plans for more musicals, and those are now gone. The scientist and the author E.O. Wilson, Ed Wilson, who was born in 1929, died this year. He was raised religious, but he said that during his baptism, he became keenly aware that he felt nothing. He felt no transcendence. And something small somewhere cracked, he wrote. I had discovered that what I most loved on the planet, which was life on the planet, made sense only in terms of evolution and the idea of natural selection. And that was a far more interesting, richer, and more powerful explanation than the teachings of the New Testament. That was E.O. Wilson. The talk show host, Larry King, who was born in 1933, died this year. Larry King interviewed FFRF's principal founder, Ann Gaylor, many years ago. Larry King was a Jewish agnostic. He didn't believe it. He talked like he was an atheist toward the end of his life. He was a thoroughly secular individual. Another loss this year was the physicist Steven Weinberg, who was born in 1933. He won the Nobel Prize for uniting the electromagnetic and the weak nuclear force. Steven Weinberg spoke at our FFRF convention in San Antonio. In 1999, Weinberg told the New York Times, "With or without religion, good people can behave well and bad people can do evil. But for good people to do evil, that takes religion." The attorney Sarah Weddington died this year. She was born in 1945. Sarah Weddington is the attorney who argued Roe versus Wade at the age of 21, and she won that case. That case, of course, has been in the news ever since then, and it is in jeopardy right now. We also lost a number of good friends, members and supporters of FFRF and of State Church Separation. As we just heard recently on an earlier show, Tom Flynn, the CEO of the Council for Secular Humanism and the editor of Free Inquiry and the author of the book, The Trouble with Christmas, died this year. We spoke with Tom on this show back in 2006.
I was the product of a Catholic education, eventually fought my way out of that position, ultimately became an atheist, and spent several years continuing to celebrate Christmas, and it just seemed stranger and stranger to be observing the birthday of a Savior I no longer believed in.
That was Tom Flynn, kind of a happy skeptic, and he went to work on December 25th every year. We're going to miss Tom Flynn. He was a real powerful presence in the Freethought community. And then a very close friend of mine since 1990, the Bible scholar and the prolific author, Hector Avalos. He died this year. He was born in 1958. We spoke with Hector Avalos many times on Free Thought Radio.
I was born in Mexico into a Pentecostal family in a town called Nogales, and I was a child evangelist, faith healer. Eventually, I began to study the Bible very seriously in order to defeat atheists and convert people to Christianity. And eventually, it was Bible study which led me to become an unbeliever.
Hector, of course, was a world-renowned Bible scholar. He was my go-to guy whenever I had a question about the Old Testament words, the Hebrew, or even New Testament. He knew a lot about the Greek. And now I'm going to have to just read many of the books that he wrote. We're going to miss Hector. Then Bobby Kirkhart. Bobby Kirkhart was a longtime friend, a free thought humanist activist, an FFRF member and supporter. Bobby Kirkhart was born in 1943. She died this year. She lived in Los Angeles in a house that she called Heretic House, and I visited there a few times. It was open to all sorts of humanist, free thought, atheist activities. And she and I met each other all over the world, actually. We were in Africa promoting humanism in Cameroon. We were in Iceland and in many other countries. And she received the Free Thought Backbone Award from the Secular Student Alliance. And here's part of what she said.
Our obligation to free thought is the same as or greater than the religionist's obligation to their gods. Our work in free thought is no less than an effort to save humanity.
What a great person she was. And she's right about that. There's one thing I think a lot of religious people don't understand is that for us non-believers, for many of us atheists and agnostics, our non-belief is just as precious to us as their belief is to them. It's meaningful. It's a choice that we have made. And for many of us, it defines a large part of who we are as individuals. Then Meg Bowman. Meg Bowman was born in 1929, another very good friend, especially a good friend of Annie Laurie. She was a feminist, an atheist, a Unitarian, a professor, and a civil rights activist, who's featured in Annie Laurie's book, Women Without Superstition. We will miss Meg Bowman. Stephen Yule. Stephen Yule was born in 1930. He was a former priest. He's the author of the book, Out of God's Closet. Stephen Yule, with his wife Diane, have been longtime generous supporters of FFRF and free thought and humanist causes. Stephen Yule has died this year, but listeners to this show will know that his name lives on in this Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio, in which this radio show and Free Thought Matters TV show are recorded. We talked with Stephen Yule a few years ago about why he left the priesthood and became an atheist.
My mother was a very fervent Roman Catholic, and she had a vocation for me to be the family priest. So I went to a boarding seminary, was ordained after 12 years of fairly rigorous study at the age of 25. Well, things went swimmingly as I helped with the counseling program and taught mathematics in our high school. After about 9 years, though, a doubt began to develop based on a meditation. One morning in our monastery chapel, trying to use St. Thomas's proofs for God's existence. And I saw that as really not a proof at all, even though the Catholic Church had put almost dogmatic weight on it. So that's when I started to become an agnostic.
And what a great thinker he was. And he knows what it's like to believe and to dedicate his life to one cause. And then he knows how hard it was. He knew how hard it was to admit I was wrong and change his mind. We will miss Stephen Yule. And, of course, we're in communication with Diane a lot, who is continuing to support, not just in his memory, but to support the very important work to keep state and church separate. So you can read more about these and many other historical and contemporary atheists and agnostics on the Freedom from Religion Foundation's Free Thought of the Day webpage, which you can find at ffrf.org/day. You can also sign up to receive a daily morning email remembering the birthdays and the quotes of hundreds of people who were and are free from religion. We're going to take a break. Stay tuned. After the break, we're going to hear some free thought music. Some of it is irreverent. Some of it is funny. Some of it is thoughtful, welcoming in the new year. I'm Dan Barker. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. The year 2021, like 2020, will be remembered primarily as another pandemic year. We were hoping we would not have to play this song again like we played it last year, but here we go. This is the very funny song by Tom Lehrer. It's called I Got It From Agnes.
I love my friends, and they love me. We're just as close as we can be. And just because we really care, whatever we get, we share. I got it from Agnes, she got it from Jim. We all agree it must have been Louise who gave it to him. And she got it from Harry, who got it from Marie. And everybody knows that Marie got it from me. Giles got it from Daphne, she got it from Joan. She picked it up in Ireland, a kiss in the Blarney Stone. Pierre gave it to Sheila, who must have brought it there. He got it from Francois and Jacques. Aha, lucky Pierre. Max got it from Edith, who gets it every spring. She got it from her daddy, who just gives her everything. She then gave it to Daniel, whose spaniel has it now. Our dentist even got it, and we're still wondering how. Ah, but I got it from Agnes, or maybe it was Sue, or Millie, or Billy, or Jilly, or Willie, or doesn't matter who. It might have been at the pub, or at the club, or in the loo, and if you will be my friend, then I might. Mind you, I said might. Give it to you.
And that was Tom Lehrer. I got it from Agnes. 2021 was also a year about racial equity and a year about voting rights. Here is Nina Simone in 1964 at Carnegie Hall singing a song that she wrote to protest racial injustice. It's called Mississippi Goddamn.
The name of this tune is Mississippi Goddamn. And I mean every word of it. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi Goddamn. Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about Mississippi Goddamn. Can't you see it? Can't you feel it? It's all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama's gotten me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. And everybody knows about show tune, but the show hasn't been written for it yet. Hound dogs on my trail, school children sitting in jail, black cat cross my path, I think every day is gonna be my last. Lord have mercy on this land of mine. We all gonna get it in due time. I don't belong here, I don't belong there. I've even stopped believing in prayer. Don't tell me, I'll tell you. Me and my people just about do. I've been there so I know. keep on saying, go slow. Well, that's just the trouble. Washing the windows, picking the cotton, you're just plain rotten. You thought I was kidding, didn't? Picket lines, schools, boycotts, they try to say it's a communist plot. All I want is equality for my sister, my brother, my people, and me. Yes, you lied to me all these years. You told me to wash and clean my ears and talk real fine just like a lady, and you'd stop calling me Sister Sadie. Oh, but this whole country is full of lies. You all gonna die and die like flies. I don't trust you anymore. You keep on saying, go slow.
That was the great Nina Simone. Very brave, too, singing before that largely rich, largely white audience, singing about civil rights. 2021 was also a year of continuing, escalating threats to state-church separation. Too many governors and other elected officials are inserting faith into their policies, especially regarding religious exemptions from COVID mandates. We think public officials should focus on secular policy and leave religion to the private sphere. Here's a song I wrote about that. It's called Get Off Your Knees and Get to Work.
This song is dedicated to Governor Rip Van Periwinkle, who overslept not 30, but 2,030 years. If you find yourself to be a resident of the Capitol or of the City Hall, as governor or mayor or as president, you're a public servant to us all. You were not elected as our pastor-in-chief, and preaching on the job is not a perk. Govern us with reason and not belief. Get off your knees and get to work. Get off your knees and start thinking. The answers will be found right here on earth. Unbow your head and open your eyes. Get off your knees and get to work. It makes no actual difference what you say to God. He may as well be Santa or an elf. Every time you bow your head and pray to God, you are only talking to yourself. If you run your office with sobriety, your First Amendment duties you won't shirk. Everyone is tired of your piety. Get off your knees and get to work. Get off your knees and start thinking. The answers will be found right here on earth. off your knees and get to work. Faith won't fix the budget. Prayer won't pay the bill. Hope will never nudge it. But taxing churches will. Get off your knees and start thinking. The answers will be found right here on earth. Unbow your head and open your eyes. Get off your knees and get to work. Get off those knees and get to work. Get off your knees. Get to work.
And that was Get Off Your Knees and Get to Work, originally aimed at Texas Governor Rick Perry. But, of course, Texas has a governor who's even worse now, Greg Abbott, worse in regards to state church separation. And then, of course, 2021 was a year of uncertainty for women's rights, for abortion rights. Another song we were hoping not to have to play again is a song that the folk singer-songwriter Kristen Lems wrote 30 years ago, which is still very relevant today. It's called Days of the Theocracy. That was Kristen Lem singing a song which is unfortunately still relevant today, The Days of the Theocracy. Kristen Lem and I recorded a version of the old German Freethought anthem, Die Gedanken sind frei, which means, my thoughts are free.
Die Gedanken dusk and soon fly. My thoughts give me power.
No scholar can map them.
No hunter can trap them. No person can deny. Die Gedanken sind frei. No person can deny. Die Gedanken sind frei.
I think as I please, and this gives me pleasure.
My conscience decrees, this right I must treasure.
My thoughts will not cater
to duke or dictator. No person can deny, die Gedanken sind frei. No person can deny, die Gedanken sind frei. My thoughts will burst free like blossoms in season.
Foundations will crumble and structures will tumble.
And free people shall cry, Die Gedanken sind frei. And free people shall cry, Die Gedanken sind frei.
That was me and Kristen Lim singing Die Gedanken sind frei, which means my thoughts are free, which is what Free Thought Radio is all about. We're going to take a break, and after the break, we're going to say farewell to 2021 and welcome in the year 2022. I'm Dan Barker. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie is home with a really bad cold today. It's not COVID. She got tested. She'll be back with us again next week. So let's end the year with the traditional and meaningful Auld Lang Syne. The words were by the Scottish poet Robert Browning, whose religious views varied over his life. He sometimes called himself an atheist, and at other times, he called himself a religious nonconformist. But the words to Auld Lang Syne are definitely secular. They're talking about our friends whom we know do exist in this world, friends and family that give so much meaning to our lives. Here is Robert Browning's Auld Lang Syne, sung by Celtic Lady.
For Auld Lang Syne.
That was Celtic Lady singing Auld Lang Syne, based on a poem by Robert Browning. And Robert Browning was a totally secular person. He knew how to enjoy this life. And in fact, if you look at the words to Auld Lang Syne, all the other verses, they're all about drinking. You'll share a pint and I'll share a pint and we'll enjoy our lives together. So I guess that's one way to celebrate. Some of us will be drinking responsibly, I'm sure, bringing in the new year. So that's our show for today. We want to thank Grant Blaschka again for engineering it in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio. And we want to say hello to listeners to the show that's being broadcast on WOOM in Philadelphia. Also in the Philadelphia area, WZML LP in Bryn Mawr. Here in Madison, Wisconsin, WIDE-FM and WMUU-LP. And in Janesville, Wisconsin, to WADR. In College Station, Texas, to KEOS. To listeners in Columbia, Missouri, in Central Missouri, KOPN. Over in Eugene, Oregon, KEPW 97.3. San Marcos, Texas, KZSM. Black Sheep Radio, it's called WOOL, that's a cute name, in Vermont, New Hampshire. And then WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York. And hello to all you podcast listeners. You can find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio. And we do encourage you to continue listening, but also to become a member of FFRF. You can join us at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. You can support our important state church litigation, become part of the largest Free Thought Association in North America. You can phone us at 1-800-335-4021. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday you'll join us.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Today, a Democracy Now! Special, celebrating 25 years on the air. On February 19, 1996, on the eve of the New Hampshire presidential primary, Democracy Now! Aired for the first time on 9 community radio stations.
This is Democracy Now! From Pacifica Radio, I'm Amy Goodman in Washington. Today on Democracy Now!, Live Free or Die, a look at the political landscape in New Hampshire where the Republican Revolution has taken its toll.
If you want a taste of the country after the revolution, you might as well visit New Hampshire today, because we're the state that has the most regressive taxes in the country, that doesn't have mandatory kindergarten, that doesn't invest in its infrastructure.
Also, the politics of race in the Granite State, and money talks. Who are the millionaires having their way in Washington?
You need to go up to Bob Dole now that he's on this corporate welfare line and say, you know, okay, that's great that you've taken up this plank. Whose corporate jet did you fly up here on? Dwayne Andreas, the number 3 on the Mother Jones list, or Carl Lindner, the number 4 on the Mother Jones list? You need to relentlessly expose them.
All coming up on Democracy Now! Today is President's Day, and tomorrow is the New Hampshire primary. Welcome to the maiden voyage of Democracy Now!, Pacifica's daily national election show. Greetings to our audiences in California, Texas, New York, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., Washington State, Kansas City, and Colorado. In this election year, we're embarking on a 9-month journey through the country and hope to pick up community radio stations in many more states as we go, as we give voice to the grassroots. And that 9-month project will begin a quarter of a century ago. That's right, Democracy Now! Went on the air on 9 community radio stations in 1996. It now airs on over 1,500 TV and radio stations around the globe and online at democracynow.org. In 1998,
Democracy Now! Documented Chevron's role in the killing of two protesters who occupied a Chevron-owned oil platform in the oil-rich Niger Delta in Nigeria. Democracy Now!'s Jeremy Scahill and I traveled to the Niger Delta to investigate and produce this special documentary, Drilling and Killing, Chevron and Nigeria's Oil Dictatorship. This is an excerpt. Until now, Chevron has claimed that its only action against the occupation was to call the federal authorities and tell them what was happening. But in a startling admission in a three-hour interview with Democracy Now!, Chevron spokesperson Shola Omole acknowledged that Chevron did much more. He admitted that Chevron actually flew in the soldiers who did the killing, and he further admitted that those men were from the notorious Nigerian Navy.
I guess...
Who took them in?
What's that?
Who took them in?
Who took them in?
On Thursday morning, the mobile police.
We did. We Chevron did. We took them there.
By how?
Helicopters. Yes, we took them in.
Who authorized the call for the military to come in?
That's Chevron's management.
And so here we have, on May 28, 1998, Chevron flying in the Nigerian Navy and the mobile police to confront a group of villagers who thought they were in the midst of a negotiation with the oil giant. Which brings us to another admission by Chevron spokesperson Shola Omole. Again, listen carefully.
Were any of these armed?
I don't know. So I cannot say that they came armed with, there was talk about local charms and all that, but that's neither here nor there.
So you don't think that they came onto the boat armed?
No.
It is very clear that Chevron, just like Shell, uses the military to protect its oil activities. They drill and they kill.
Again, environmentalist Oronto Douglas.
They are shooting our people for just demanding for their right.
In 1999, Democracy Now! Was in the streets of Seattle when tens of thousands of activists gathered to shut down a ministerial meeting of the World Trade Organization. In Seattle, we spoke with Indian scientist and activist Vandana Shiva and Lori Wallach of Public Citizen.
The WTO constrains every country government about literally the level of food safety it can provide its public, or whether or not poor farmers can have access to seeds, whether or not workers can be safe from asbestos.
Actually, the secrecy through which WTO was born is apparent in the fact that most parliaments had no idea what was the content of this treaty till months after it had been ratified and signed in Marrakesh. The WTO wrote the rules, it sits in judgment about implementation of those rules, and it writes the Inquisition.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting live from Seattle. Democracy Now! Grew into a daily television show in 2001. But one of our first broadcasts took place in August 2000 at the Republican National Convention in Philadelphia.
From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now! Breaking with convention, power protest, and the presidency. George Bush accepts the Republican nomination for president. We'll get reaction from Barbara Gonzalez and Jello Biafra. Also, a look at the conduct of the Philadelphia police this week and a tour through the Independent Media Center. All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, broadcasting on community radio stations around the country, on public access TV stations around the country, on the Internet, both live streaming and video casting at www.democracynow.org in an unprecedented community media collaboration. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez as we continue our reaction to the
nomination speech, of the acceptance speech of George W. Bush for nomination by the Republican Party as their presidential candidate. Juan?
Yes, as I said, an amazing speech by Bush. And, he actually attempted basically to portray himself as a caring, sensitive, compassionate conservative, but the reality of the message that he was bringing of increased military spending, of privatization of portions of Social Security accounts, of charter schools that would help to begin to tear apart the public school system rather than raise the level of the public school system throughout, I think was one that was clearly at the right fringe of American politics today.
On Election Day in 2000, then-President Bill Clinton called Pacifica radio station WBAI in an attempt to get out the vote for Hillary for Senate and Al Gore for president. While he may have intended to spend about 2 minutes on the phone, WBAI host Gonzalo Alberto and I kept him on the line for about half an hour, asking him about topics that weren't being discussed in the presidential race.
Mr. President, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
You're calling radio stations to tell people to get out and vote. What do you say to people who feel that the two parties are bought by corporations and that they are, at this point, feel that their vote doesn't make a difference?
There's not a shred of evidence to support that.
President Clinton, UN figures show that up to 5,000 children a month die in Iraq because of the sanctions against
Iraq. That's not true. And that's not what they show.
The past two UN heads of the program in Iraq have quit, calling the U.S. Policy, U.S.-UN policy, genocidal. What is your response to that?
They're wrong. They think that we should reward Saddam Hussein says, I'm going to starve my kids unless you let me buy nuclear weapons, chemical weapons, and biological weapons. If you let me do everything I want to do so I can get in a position to kill and intimidate people again, then I'll stop starving my kids. And so we're supposed to assume responsibility for his misconduct. That's just not right.
President Clinton, since it's rare to get you on the phone, let me ask you another question. That is, what is your position on granting Leonard Peltier, the Native American activist, executive clemency?
Well, I don't have a position I can announce yet. I think I believe there is a new application for him in there, and when I have time after the election's over, I'm going to review all the remaining executive clemency applications and see what the merits dictate. I will try to do what I think the right thing to do is based on the evidence.
Many people say that Ralph Nader is at the high percentage point he is in the polls because you've been responsible for taking the Democratic Party to the right.
What is the measure of taking the Democratic Party to the right? That we cut the welfare rolls in half, that poverty is at a 20-year low, that child poverty has been cut by a third in our administration, that the schools in this country, that the test scores among, since we've required all the schools to have basic standards, test scores among African Americans and other minorities have gone up steadily.
Can I say what
now,
some people...
Now, wait a minute. You started this, and every question you've asked has been hostile and combative. So you listen to my answer. Will you do that?
They've been critical.
Now, you just listen to me. You ask the questions, and I'm going to answer. You have asked questions in a hostile, combative, and even disrespectful tone, and you have never been able to combat the facts I have given you. Now, you listen to this.
That was President Clinton in a surprise call to WBAI on Election Day 2000. The White House would later call me and say they were thinking of banning me from the White House. I said, but he called me. I didn't call him. As for Native American leader Leonard Peltier, he remains in prison to this day. I had a chance to speak to Leonard on the phone from prison in Florida in 2012 during the Obama administration. Leonard, this is Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!
Hi, Amy, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. I was wondering if you have a message for President Obama.
I just hope he can, stop the wars that are going on in the world and stop killing all those people getting killed and, give the Black Hills back to my people and turn me loose.
Can you
share with people at the news conference and with President Obama your case for why you should be, your sentence should be commuted, why you want clemency?
Well, I never got a fair trial, for one. They wouldn't allow me to put up a defense. And manufactured evidence, manufactured witnesses, tortured witnesses. You know, the list just goes on. So I think I'm a very good candidate for, after 37 years, for clemency, or house arrest, at least.
That was Leonard Peltier. One guest who's appeared multiple times on Democracy Now! Over the years is the imprisoned former Black Panther and journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal.
We're going to interrupt the broadcast because right now we have just gotten a call from Mumia Abu-Jamal from prison in Pennsylvania. Mumia Abu-Jamal is speaking to us for the first time, no longer on death row.
This call is from the State Correctional Institution at Mahanoy and is subject to monitoring and recording.
You've probably heard me refer to life as slow death row. It sounds a little dramatic, but it is really more truth to it than hyperbole. And that's because, you know, in Pennsylvania, it has the highest population, or one of the highest populations in the state, of lifers. In fact, juveniles with life sentences. And in Pennsylvania, there's no gradation. You know, all lifers are lifers, and that's for their whole life. It's slow death row, to be sure. And when you see, as I've seen, going to chow or going to a meal and seeing what I call the million-man wheelchair march, it makes an impact on you. You know, you look up in the morning, and there are 30 or 40 guys going to the handicap line, and they're in wheelchairs. And although some are young, most are quite old. Life means life in Pennsylvania.
The words of Mumia Abu-Jamal. After a break, we'll continue our look back at the past 25 years of Democracy Now!
Sola voy con mi pena, sola va mi condena. Correr es mi destino para burlar la ley. Perdida en el corazón de la grande Babilón. Me dicen clandestino por no llevar papel. A una ciudad del norte yo me fui a trabajar. Mi vida la dejé entre Tijuana y Bagdad. Soy una raya en el mar, fantasma en la ciudad. Mi vida va prohibida, dice la autoridad.
¿Qué será de nosotros si no pensamos en los niños?
Performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. On the evening of December 7th, that's Tuesday at 8 p.m., Lila Downs will join Noam Chomsky, Angela Davis, Arundhati Roy, Winona LaDuke, and others as we celebrate online 25 years of Democracy Now! We hope you'll join us. Visit democracynow.org for details. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As we return to our look back at excerpts of Democracy Now! Over the past quarter of a century. On the morning of September 11th, 2001, Democracy Now! Was on the air when the World Trade Center was attacked. Broadcasting on radio for over 6 hours, Democracy Now! Covered the attacks just blocks from Ground Zero.
The latest news we have is that there have been widespread attacks that include at least 3 commercial jet crashes. We now believe perhaps 4, 3 commercial jet crashes into significant buildings. In the first attack, a plane hit the North Tower of the World Trade Center in Manhattan shortly before 9 o'clock, followed by another plane into the second tower about 20 minutes later. Both towers later collapsed. About an hour later, a plane crashed into the Pentagon, part of which later collapsed.
Democracy Now! Closely followed the fallout from the 9/11 attacks both at home and abroad. In December of 2001, Masuda Sultan, an Afghan-American woman, reported on Democracy Now! From Afghanistan about a U.S. air raid that killed 19 members of her family.
They described the scene where they were running with their kit in their arms, dodging bullets left and right while they had, well, they saw balls of fire falling down to the earth. There were women and children running for their lives, being shot at by a helicopter hovering over their homes. And these people were not Taliban supporters. They weren't Al-Qaeda fighters. They were simple Afghans trying to stay safe in their own country.
After Masuda Sultan came back to New York, she came on Democracy Now! Along with Rita Lazar, who lost her brother Abe Zalmanowicz at the World Trade Center.
I live on the 15th floor and ran to my neighbor's house, and she has a clear view of downtown Manhattan. And I looked out her window and saw the second plane hit the second building. And it dawned on me, my brother works there. I went down to the hospitals to see if his name was on the list. And then I realized he had died. And because he had stayed behind to stay with his quadriplegic brother, friend, who couldn't get out, although he was on the 27th floor and he could have saved himself, he died. And then President Bush mentioned him in the National Cathedral speech and cited him as being a hero. And I realized that my government was going to use my brother as justification for killing other people. And that had a tremendous impact on me. I didn't want that to happen, not in my brother's name.
First of all, I want to express my condolences to Rita. I did before, but I think your brother is a hero. And you're a hero for continuing his legacy. And it's amazing to me that someone who's lost so much isn't as revenge hungry as some of the other people that seem to want to, you know, go start bombing, you know, whoever, wherever.
Masuda Sultan and Rita Lazar in our Firehouse studio at Downtown Community Television, DCTV. Rita died in 2017. As we continue our Democracy Now! Journey through the decades, we turn to May 20th, 2002, when East Timor became an independent country after decades of occupation by Indonesia. I've been reporting on the East Timorese independence movement for years. On November 12, 1991, journalist Alan Nairn and I were there when Indonesian troops armed with US M-16s opened fire on thousands of unarmed East Timorese civilians who'd gathered at the Santa Cruz Cemetery.
I lost one sister and two brothers.
It was 10 days before I was to give birth. The army was shooting people, and they would die at our feet, but you couldn't stop to help them.
I know families that were totally wiped out.
Two American newsmen badly beaten, Mr. Alan Lairn and Ms. Amy Goodman.
The Indonesian army converged in two places.
Hundreds and hundreds of troops coming straight at the Timorese.
When they came, they opened fire on the people.
Well, we pride ourselves, and I think properly so, in standing up for human rights.
At least 271 Timorese were killed that day. The Indonesian military fractured Alan Nairn's skull. More than a decade later, East Timor became an independent country. Alan Nairn and I returned to the capital, Dili, for the celebration. Allen questioned former President Bill Clinton.
In 1999, in April, the Indonesian military and their militias massacred 50 people in the rectory in Likisa. They hacked them with machetes. 2 days later, Admiral Blair, the commander for the Pacific, your commander, met with General Wiranto, the Indonesian commander. He offered to help him in lobbying the U.S. Congress to get full U.S. military training restored. He made no mention of the Likisa massacre. During that same period, the Indonesian militias rampaged here in downtown Dili. They attacked the house of Manuel Carrascalau. They massacred the refugees there. Yet you continued for months with aid to the Indonesian military. Why?
What are your questions?
Why did you continue with aid to the Indonesian military if they were killing civilians?
I can't answer the question you asked about Admiral Blair. You'll have to ask him that because I'm not aware of that.
He was working for you. Why did you continue military aid to Indonesia?
But I understand that. I think, first of all, I don't believe America or any of the other countries was sufficiently sensitive in the beginning and for a long time, and a long time before 1999, going all the way back to the 70s, to the suffering of the people of East Timor. I don't think we can defend everything we did.
That was East Timor in 2002. Almost a year later, on February 15, 2003, millions of people around the globe rallied to say no to the Iraq War. Democracy Now! Broadcasts live from massive protest in New York. This is actor and activist Harry Belafonte.
This is not the first time that we as a people have been misled by the leadership. We were misled by those who created the falseness of the Bay of Tonkin, which falsely led us into a war with Vietnam. A war that we could not and did not win. We lied to the American people about Grenada and what was going on in that tiny island. We lied to the American people about Nicaragua, El Salvador, Cuba, and many places in the world. And we stand here today to let those people and others know that America is a vast and diverse country, and we are part of the greater truth of what makes our nation. Dr. King once said that if mankind does not put an end to war, war will put an end to mankind.
In 2004, Democracy Now! Broke the news about the ouster of Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide in a U.S.-backed coup.
From Pacifica Radio, this is a Democracy Now! Exclusive.
He was kidnapped. He said he was forced to leave Haiti.
Did U.S. security forces kidnap Haitian President Aristide? We'll speak with Congressmember Maxine Waters and Aristide's close friend, TransAfrica founder Randall Robinson.
He said, tell the world it's a coup. It's a coup. It's a coup.
Representative Waters is claiming on Pacifica stations on the West Coast that Aristide was led away in handcuffs by U.S. Marines and claiming that the Marines were part of a coup to remove him. I wonder if either one of you gentlemen would comment on her comment or claim. Other than the smile.
I'm trying to pick the right words. If you're asking me, did that happen, the answer is no.
But any embellishments?
I think not today.
Weeks later, Democracy Now! Reported on President Aristide's return to the Caribbean.
It's been an historic 48 hours. Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide has defied Washington, returning to the Caribbean. Late last night, I returned to New York after a trip that began on Saturday when I accompanied a delegation of U.S. and Jamaican officials who set off from Miami, Florida, on a mission to escort President Aristide and his wife, Mildred, back to the Caribbean. On the plane, I asked President Aristide why he believes the U.S. wants him gone.
Those who want to invest in killing democracy, in bloodshed, they don't accept you as an elected president.
We move forward in this Democracy Now! 25-year special to 2005, When Democracy Now! Went down to New Orleans and the community of Algiers shortly after Hurricane Katrina hit, I spoke with Malik Rahim, co-founder of the Common Ground Collective. Malik showed us how a corpse still remained on the street unattended 2 weeks after the storm.
Now, his body been here for almost 2 weeks, 2 weeks tomorrow, all right, that this man been body been laying here. And there's no reason for it. I mean, that's just totally disrespect. You know, and I mean, 2 weeks. Every day we ask him about come and pick it up. And he refused to come and pick it up. And you can see it, it's literally decomposing right here, right out in the sun. Every day we sit up and we ask him about it. Because, I mean, this is closest you could get to tropical climate in America. And they won't do anything with it.
Malik, do you know who this person is?
No. But regardless of who it is, I wouldn't care if it's Saddam Hussein or bin Laden. Nobody deserves to be left here. And the kids pass by here and they're seeing it. I mean, the elderly, this is what's frightening a lot of people into leaving. We don't know if he's a victim of vigilantes or what, but that's all we know is that his body has been allowed to remain out here for over 2 weeks.
In September 2005, Democracy Now! Spoke to Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez in his first sit-down interview in the United States.
Mr. President Hugo Chavez, your assessment of President Bush, of the invasion and occupation of Iraq, and do you think if it weren't Iraq, it would have been Venezuela?
Now, is it clear that the U.S. Government wants
Planificar.
Oil? That's why they planned.
Primero fueron por el de Venezuela.
First, they tried to get the Venezuelan
fue el
oil,
golpe contra nosotros.
And that was the coup they staged.
Eso fue un golpe petrolero.
That was an oil-motivated coup.
Querían tener asegurado
they
el petróleo venezolano.
Have the control of the Venezuelan oil
para luego ir por el de Irak.
Before going for the Iraq for Iraq
fracasaron en Venezuela.
They failed in Venezuela.
Se lanzaron sobre Irak.
So they rather went to attack Iraq.
In 2007, Juan Gonzalez and I interviewed then CNN anchor Lou Dobbs on Democracy Now.
So that the question is that there is a huge disparity between the economic levels in Mexico and the economic levels in the United States. And you have properly said many times on your show that American companies are creating the problems rather than helping to alleviate the problems. It, all that would be needed to do is to raise the economic level in Mexico and the entire illegal immigration population problems would decline in this country. And not only that, but the country, if it had a higher immigration
quota. Are you giving me instruction or are you telling me what we agree upon?
No, we don't agree. We don't agree because you are demonizing illegal immigration as a separate issue.
How in the world can you use my name and anti-immigrant in the same breath?
When we hear comments like a third of the from you, we've played them, so we can't refute the videotape. Look, we can't refute. A third of prisoners are illegal immigrants. No, a third of prisoners are illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. Not true. 7,000 leprosy cases in the last 3 years because of illegal immigrants.
Christine
Romans
misspoke. We said that, and that's as straightforward as we can put it.
And you made an announcement on your show.
Absolutely.
And you will say it here.
Absolutely.
That it is not true. Illegal immigrants are not responsible for 7,000 cases of leprosy over the last 3 years.
Not over the last 3 years.
Lou Dobbs on Democracy Now! In 2007. Fox Business dropped his show earlier this year after he and Fox were sued for spreading lies about the 2020 election. On September 1st, 2008, Democracy Now! Producers Sharifa Gokhadous, Nicole Salazar, and I were among the journalists arrested during a police crackdown at the Republican National Convention in St. Paul. As the riot police came at Nicole shouting, "On your face," she shouted back, "Press, press."
Get out of here.
Press. Press.
Get down on your face. On your face.
Get down on your face.
Get on your face.
That was Nicole Salazar screaming as the riot police took her down, bloodying her face. As Sharif Abdelkaddous told the riot police to calm down, they kicked him twice in the chest, threw him against a wall, and arrested him as well. When I got the call on the convention floor about what had happened, I raced outside to the corner of 7th and Jackson, where the riot police had formed a line, having fully contained the area. I asked to speak with a commanding officer to get Sharif and Nicole released. Sharif, Nicole, and I would successfully sue the St. Paul and Minneapolis police and the Secret Service for our arrests. When we come back, we'll have more on our 25th anniversary special.
As I was walking, I saw a sign there. And that sign said, private property. But on the other side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me. Sing with me. This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. Nobody living can ever stop me as I go walking that freedom highway. Nobody living can make me turn back now, 'cause this land was made for you and me, brothers and sisters.
Tom Morello on Democracy Now! On the evening of Tuesday, December 7th at 8 p.m. Eastern, Tom will join Noam Chomsky, Angela Davis, Arundhati Roy, Winona LaDuke, and others as we celebrate 25 years of Democracy Now! Join us for the online celebration. You can check out democracynow.org for more information. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we return now to our look back at excerpts of Democracy Now! Over the past quarter century, let's go to 2010, when the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks released footage of U.S. soldiers firing from a military helicopter on Iraqi civilians. The dead included two employees of the Reuters news agency, the 22-year-old photographer Namir Nur Eldin and the driver Saeed Shema.
Let me know when you get it. Watch you. Light them all up.
0-2 traffic, 260s.
Come on, fire.
Julian Assange, tell us how you got this footage.
We got this footage sometime last year. We don't disclose precise times for reasons of source protection. When we first got it, we were told that it was important and that it showed the killing of journalists, but we didn't have any other context. And we spent quite some months after breaking the decryption looking closely into this. And the more we looked, the more disturbing it became. This is a sequence which has a lot of detail, and I think in some ways covers most of the bad aspects of the aerial war in Iraq and what we must be able to infer is going on in Afghanistan.
As we continue to look at 25 years of Democracy Now!, we turn to the Egyptian revolution that ousted President Hosni Mubarak in 2011. Democracy Now!'s Hani Massoud and Sharif Abdelkaddous were on the ground in Cairo.
Here we're on the edge of Tahrir Square. There are many rocks and stones that have littered the ground here. Army tanks are stationed, but they just stood by as Mubarak's thugs came in on horseback and camel and attacked crowds. There's many wounded here in slings. They're bandaged. Here's a child. He's about 5 or 6 years old. He's being fed yogurt by his mother. He's bruised on the side of his face. I asked his mother what happened to him, and she said, he's a revolutionary. He's fighting for his future.
That report aired on Friday, February 4th, 2011. Hosni Mubarak resigned a week later. On September 17th, 2011, Occupy Wall Street. Democracy Now! Was one of the only national news outlets to report on the first day of action. Democracy Now!'s Sam Alkoff filed this report.
On Saturday, thousands of protesters took to the streets of downtown Manhattan for what was described as an action to occupy Wall Street. Inspired by the popular uprisings of the Arab Spring and the European anti-austerity movements, Adbusters, a Vancouver-based culture-jamming magazine, put out a call for Saturday's protest on Wall Street in July. The goals were various, from limiting corporate contributions to political campaigns, to auditing the Federal Reserve, to challenging all of global capitalism. Protesters included 71-year-old Mary Ellen Marino of Princeton, New Jersey.
I came because I'm upset with the fact that the bailout of Wall Street didn't help any of the people holding mortgages. All the money went to Wall Street and none of it went to Main Street. Now we've just learned that Geithner was actually asked to split up the Citibank and he didn't do it and Obama didn't do anything about it.
The plan wasn't simply for a one-day protest, but an ongoing and creative occupation of the financial district itself. Organizer Lorenzo Serna.
The idea is to have an encampment. Like, this isn't a one-day event. Like, we're hoping that people come prepared to stay as long as they can, and that we're there to support each other.
But on Saturday, after hundreds arrived, the NYPD shut Wall Street down itself, barricading activists off from Wall Street and forcing a move to the nearby Zuccotti Park. Despite sometimes tense standoffs with the police, hundreds slept in the park and have maintained that they will stay until their demands are met.
On September 21st, 2011, Democracy Now! Broadcast live for 6 hours from the grounds of the prison in Georgia where Troy Anthony Davis was executed. We were the only news outlet to continuously broadcast live from the prison grounds that night.
From Georgia's death row prison in Jackson, this is a Democracy Now! Special broadcast. We are just an hour from the scheduled execution of Troy Anthony Davis, an execution the whole world is watching.
And I just would like to say that, you know, I've been battling cancer for 10 years, and I don't have cancer, but I'm reaping some of the effects of the medicine. Several months ago, I was doing fine. And after that, I couldn't get up out of the chair. But I'm here to tell you that I'm going to stand here for my brother today.
Mama.
Again, prison official sharing the news that Troy Anthony Davis was executed at 11:08. That was the time of death. I'm standing with
Wesley Boyd, and I'd like to say there's been a travesty of justice, and I'd like to tell America ought to be ashamed of itself, and God help America, and if you're alive in America, please don't come to Georgia. Don't come to Georgia. Don't buy any Georgia pecans. Don't buy any Georgia peaches. Don't buy any trade with Georgia, the whole world. Don't buy anything with Georgia. God bless America. God bless Troy Davis.
In July 2014, Israel launched a massive 50-day assault on Gaza, ultimately killing more than 2,200 Palestinians, the majority of them civilian, including more than 500 children. An Israeli gunboat shelled a group of Palestinian children on a Gaza beach, killing four of them. Democracy Now!'s Sharif Abdelkaddous was in Gaza, where he spoke with the boys' families.
I also met with the mother today of Muhammad, the 11-year-old who was killed
She said he was a child that loved the sea. He had seven. He has seven sisters. His father ruined his back about 10 years ago fishing, and they were waiting for him to grow and become the family breadwinner. And there was just deep, deep tragedy and sorrow in the house.
On August 9th, 2014, in Ferguson, Missouri, Darren Wilson, a white police officer, fatally shot unarmed African-American teenager Michael Brown. The shooting sparked mass protests and became a key moment in the Black Lives Matter movement. In the aftermath of the shooting, Democracy Now! Traveled to Ferguson.
So tell me your name and tell me what your sign says and what do you think?
My name is Rona and my sign is Negro Spring. The same as the Arabs fought for their rights, for their civil rights to oust their corrupt government, we're fighting for our civil rights, our human rights. We would like, as an end result to this, one of the end results, for there to be a law. Police officers should not be allowed to hide behind a badge when they commit a crime. When we commit a crime, we have the penalties. They should have penalties. It's not fair. They should not be treated like extra special humans.
In July 2015, Democracy Now! Interviewed all three co-founders of the Black Lives Matter movement, Patrice Cullors, Opal Tometi, and Alicia Garza. This is Alicia.
The Black Lives Matter movement has to, by its very nature, be intersectional because of the complexities of who black people are in this country and throughout the world. There's nothing separate about wages from black life and the survival of black people than police violence and police terrorism. We even still have a situation in this country where we have black workers who are not covered by federal labor protections, like domestic workers and farm workers. So we certainly can't just look at the issues of police violence. Police violence is the tip of the iceberg when it relates to the conditions overall of black people across the globe.
In 2015, Democracy Now!'s Nermeen Sheikh and I and the team were in Paris for the historic UN Climate Summit. While in France, we traveled an hour and a half north to the city of Calais, site of the largest refugee camp in France. 6,000 to 7,000 people were camped out in makeshift tents in what was known as the jungle.
My name is Majd. I'm from Syria. I'm here like everyone. I'm a refugee escaped from the war. Everyone is fighting in my country, yes. So I escaped from the war. I don't want to be dead for nothing.
We're just back from Majid's tent, where he lives with two other men. And we're now on the street of, well, makeshift restaurants. There's a barber shop. This is the Kabul Cafe. And right here, as we're going in, is a map of the whole camp.
My name is Sikandar. I'm from Afghanistan.
The map of this camp, it's like a map of the world or a part of the world.
Yeah.
It's a map of where refugees are from. Most of these countries have been bombed by the United States.
I really didn't think about it. The map of the jungle is looking like the map of the world.
Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq.
Yeah.
Sudan.
Yeah, it's true. I didn't think about it, but yeah, it's true.
My name is Sadiq Hussein Khail, uh-huh. And I am from Afghanistan.
So what do you think the U.S. should be doing now?
You know, U.S. is just increasing the war. Actually, U.S. don't want to finish the war. It's their game. It's the game of George W. Bush, Obama, and all the European Union. They don't want to finish that.
In September 2016, Democracy Now! Traveled to the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation in North Dakota to document the historic indigenous uprising against the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Criminals! You guys are criminals! Go get your money somewhere else!
We're standing at the construction site of the Dakota Access Pipeline. It looks like there are at least three bulldozers that are, to people's surprise at this moment, actually bulldozing the land. There's a helicopter above, there's security here, and hundreds of people have been marching up when they heard that the construction site is actually active right now.
Look what you're doing!
This is our
mother!
Yeah.
People have gone through the-
The bulldozers are still going, and they're yelling at the men in hard hats. One man in hard hat threw one of the protesters down. And they're marching over the dirt mound. Some of the security have dogs.
Amy Goodman, this guy maced me in the face.
Can you show us the label?
Look, it's all over my sunglasses. Just maced me in the face. Dog bit him right now.
Throw the dog on me. Throw the dog on me. Look at this. Look at this.
Let me say.
Throw the dog on me. No, you did it on purpose, man. Over there, with that dog. I was like walking, throw the dog on me straight, even without any warning, you know? Look at this. Look at this.
The dog,
yeah, the dog did it, you know? Look at this. Yeah, dog did it.
Man, your dog just bit that protester. Your dog just bit that protester. Are you telling the dogs to bite the protesters? The dog has blood in its nose and its mouth. Why are you letting her dog go after the protesters? It's covered in blood. Only a few hours before the attack, we sat down with Standing Rock Sioux tribal historian LaDonna Bravebull Allard.
I don't understand why we are expendable in America. I keep telling people, we do our best. We have always been here. This is our land. Why should we fight to live in our own land? Why should we have to do that over and over again? So we have no choice. We have to stand. No matter what happens, we have to stand to save the water.
North Dakota issued an arrest warrant for me after the Democracy Now! Video of the dogs attacking indigenous water protectors went viral. We returned for the arraignment, but they would ultimately drop the charges. In late 2016, Democracy Now! Became the first foreign television news crew to get into occupied Western Sahara in years. We're in occupied Western Sahara, in Layoun, the capital of what many call Africa's last colony. Morocco occupied Western Sahara more than 40 years ago, in 1975. Western Sahara, where peaceful protesters led by women are beaten in the streets. Thousands have been tortured, imprisoned, killed, and disappeared while resisting the Moroccan occupation.
He jabbed right at my eye with his baton. I was yelling at him, "Hey, you Moroccan, you pulled out my eye."
Where natural resources are plundered from phosphates to fish.
I say that our damnation comes from the natural resources we have here. If it wasn't for these natural resources, Morocco would never have invaded Western Sahara.
Where a massive wall divides a people, the Sahrawi, the native population, denied a vote for self-determination.
If we don't speak out, especially us as victims who have suffered all of this, if we don't speak out and defend our cause, this problem will remain.
In the days after President Donald Trump's inauguration in 2017, Democracy Now! Closely covered the growing protest movement from the historic Women's March to protests over Trump's Muslim ban. This is Democracy Now!'s Nermeen Sheikh at Kennedy Airport.
We're outside New York City's John F. Kennedy Airport, outside Terminal 4, where thousands of people have gathered to protest the Trump administration's executive order, which has prevented many people from seven Muslim-majority countries from entering the United States. More than 10 of them here detained at Terminal 4. Thousands of people here chanting, "Let them in. This is what democracy looks like, and refugees welcome here." Let's talk to some of the people here.
My name is Mamida Ahmed, and I'm here today because as a Muslim woman, I find this ban extremely just personal to me because I have family members who are on visa, and now they are at risk of not being able to leave or enter the country.
Muslims who are here already in the U.S. under a Trump administration, under this administration?
Well, I would say all my Muslim brothers and sisters, there's nothing to fear. Your actions are more important. Keep doing what you're doing, and we are not going to do anything wrong. We are going to be unapologetic Muslims.
In 2018, the Democracy Now! Team reported from the U.S.-Mexico border in Texas.
We're broadcasting from Brownsville, Texas, along the U.S.-Mexico border. Behind me, the border wall that stretches in sections all the way through California. This Rio Grande Valley is the epicenter of the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy that's led to the forcible separation of more than 2,000 children from their parents.
People who are at the Keep Families Together rally here in Brownsville have now walked forward to enter the federal courthouse here in Brownsville, where so many migrants have been taken, so many migrants who've been separated from their children. They're demanding to go inside. Police are here, security of the Department of Homeland Security. We'll see what happens.
My name is Julie Madrigal. We're here to request access to the court hearings that are taking place. So that's the main reason we're here. We want to be allowed into the hearings at this moment.
We're about to enter the federal courthouse to see the treatment of the children and the parents. Because Trump has said that the parents can't, they won't be separating the children, but Trump also said that that they shouldn't even have court or lawyers or judges.
On election night 2018, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gave Democracy Now! One of her first interviews as she was elected to Congress.
I do believe that our president has abdicated his responsibility as a leader of all people in the United States. He has very clearly drawn lines into which Americans he champions and which Americans he doesn't. And that is why I feel we have a very important duty to not only fight against the spread of anti-Semitism, racism, xenophobia, but that we need to affirmatively champion the causes of these communities and our neighbors, because this is a very dangerous time in our democracy, and this is a very dangerous administration that we cannot take for granted, and we need to make sure that we are shoring up support of these communities in very tangible ways.
Weeks later, December 2018, Democracy Now! Traveled to Poland for the UN Climate Summit, where I spoke with then 15-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg in her first broadcast interview in the United States.
Because what we do now, future generations can't undo in the future. We are deciding right now how we want our future to look like.
And when did you decide climate change was the issue you wanted to devote your life to?
I have read a lot of about it, and one thing that I found very scary is tipping points. That once we reach tipping points, then there's no going back. Then we start a chain reaction beyond our control, and that is very scary. And so that I thought, instead of worrying about how future might turn out, you should try to change it while you still can. So that's what I wanted to do.
And we end our 25th anniversary special with the words of Angela Davis, speaking in June 2020, just weeks after Minneapolis police murdered George Floyd, sparking racial justice protests across the country and around the world.
This is an extraordinary moment. I've never experienced anything like the conditions we are currently experiencing. The conjuncture created by the COVID-19 pandemic and the recognition of the systemic racism that has been rendered visible under these conditions because of the disproportionate deaths in Black and Latinx communities. And this is a moment I don't know whether I ever expected to experience.
Those are just some of the highlights from the first 25 years of Democracy Now! We'll be celebrating our 25th anniversary online, hopefully with you, on the evening of December 7th at 8 p.m. Eastern with a virtual event featuring Angela Davis, Arundhati Roy, Noam Chomsky, Winona LaDuke, plus others, with musical performances by Lila Downs and Tom Morello. Visit democracynow.org for details.